I was biking to school with my daughter, and one of her friend's mothers said that she had noticed and that there were very few frogs here in Amsterdam. And she was wondering, she was building up a theory of why she hasn't noticed frogs. And she thought that it was the birds were eating all of the frogs, in particular the seagulls. And so we discussed this. And then she also said that in her neck of the woods around here, I mean, there's no woods, her neck of the canals, I guess you would say, that she had noticed there were some ducklings that were born to, you know, a nice duck family. And they were giving them bread and kind of watching them as they were growing. And then one day she was paying attention to the ducklings, and a seagull just came down and took one of the ducklings and ate it. And then that was, you know, so that she was like, I think that's what's happening to the frogs. And, you know,
blame the seagulls.
Yeah. You know, other theories were that, like, you know, it's a little cold. And so maybe the frogs are all, you know, hibernating or whatever they're doing. And then also because of the coldness, I hadn't thought about this until I was talking with her about this, but like, there's actually not that many insects during the winter, and the cold times, which, you know, I understand biology, that makes sense, but having grown up in Texas, it would never occur to me that there's a time of the year where there's not insects just flying around. But true. I think clearly they are. So yeah, I think the mystery of the frogs, I'm going to blame the seagulls. And I think maybe, I don't know, I'm starting, ever since having that conversation, I'm developing a theory that seagulls are kind of assholes. Like, I don't know if people like seagulls.
Oh no. Like, I mean, one of the early days we went down to the strip near us, the touristy area with all the seagulls. We got fish and chips and sitting down on a bench enjoying the sunset, and the seagulls just swooped us and took like all of the French fries and just knocked it over, and they're going everywhere. Like, ever since then, I'm always, you know, protective of my chips, and just,
those seagulls, they're
terrible.
I mean, is there another, I guess in Austin we have grackles, but the grackles are not really that aggressive. Forward.
Yeah.
But the seagulls are just like, I mean, they're just like you would expect a sailor to be. They're like, hey, that's mine. Out of the way. And mine. Just barge into it. Yeah. So, frogs. You have a lot of frogs there in Australia? Do they show up a lot?
I think so. I haven't noticed a lot of frogs.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. We'll have to look. I mean, there must be frogs in Australia. I mean, by this point. But I wonder, Are frogs like an indigenous species in Australia?
I'm sure we have frogs. Yeah. I have ridiculous numbers of lizards. I'm sure there are frogs. I just don't live near.
Well, that's
they're what not she the also ocean. Said. So that's the problem for me.
She also said that, like, you know, when we live in Dubai, just like living with lizards in your house was just the way it was. Yeah. There's always lizards and
spiders.
Yeah. So, you know, that's, you know, speaking of living with lizards, I think it looks like there were a few articles written this week. It looks like, despite predictions that Kubernetes would be boring, we're going to be living with it in our house forever. I think it's always going to be there. I actually had forgotten, not, I hadn't forgotten about it, but I don't think about it. And because it was, I think it was maybe, Joe Kubernetesium. I can't really make that pun well. Kubernetium Joe. Does that work?
Keep going.
I don't know. Yeah, thank you. You know, his whole deal was that he wanted Kubernetes to be boring. And this was 3-4 years ago, which was just to say, like, you know, in the same way that, like, aside from maybe listeners of this podcast, file systems are boring, right? It should just kind of recede into the efficient lower levels of the stack.
Except when the maintainer, you know, murders his wife, but that's a different kind of excitement.
Oof. That's a different podcast world, the murder podcast. That would be, I mean, listen, I am in no way making light or fun of murder, et cetera, and so forth. But like, I feel like finally my wife, Kim, and my podcast universe could finally converge.
They finally intersect.
if there was a murder podcast she listened to that was about whatever it is you just talked about,
the Riser FS. They could go back and forth. It's something for everyone. They could, you know, spend part of the time talking about optimizing bee trees and the other time, you know,
talking about burying people under trees.
That's one of the few podcast ideas that I don't think we're going to pursue.
No. Okay. Well, that's probably a good idea. Anyhow, I read through the article and it made some points, but I think the headline, as always with headlines like this, sums it up. Kubernetes predictions were wrong. We're still all interested in it. It has not become boring. It's more thrilling than ever. And people are into it. I don't know, Brandon. Were they wrong? Were there any predictions? What's the story here?
Well, I don't think there were, in the sense, we've been pursuing the same goal probably for all the time that we've been professionally working in computing, and maybe, you know, long before that. It's just like, hey, at the end of the day, we're just trying to make things simpler to build, you know, application logic and deploy it quickly. And I think, you know, with every wave, there's this like, oh, it's going to be simpler. And then it's never really simpler, right? And we just keep making it more and more complicated. So, you know, to me, it's like looking at reading that whole thing, it's not so much like Kubernetes, the container orchestrator, probably is relatively simple and, if you will, boring if you contain it to that. What is not boring is the CNCF, you know, cloud native landscape, where, you know, whatever, however many logos we're up to. And that seems to be, like, in some degree, like, I think we should all blame ourselves. This is kind of what we want, right? Like, it's a very, if you will, engineering and software architecture has sort of just kind of just driven the bus for the last 10 years. And it's like, yeah, everything should have an API, and we should have multiple implementations of the API, and we should have multiple subsystems, and we just want ultimate flexibility. And I think, you know, to some degree, it's like, that's what we want in computing, right? But at the end, it doesn't, you know, a decade plus into this, it's like, we're definitely not getting any faster at like deploying, you know, application logic, nor is it getting any easier for, like, you know, large corporations that have hundreds of applications to like deliver new functionality, right? I think in some ways it's just a minor revision of things we've seen in the past. What do you think, Matt?
Well, it's the constant tension between specialization and generalization, right? We now have a platform, Kubernetes, that anyone can run just about any workload on, for good or bad. Right. You can run bare metal. You can run GPUs. You can run at the edge. You can run in space, on planes. You know, Kubernetes is everywhere, for good or bad. Right. And the reason that the CNCF landscape looks like that is because everybody has some sort of specialized use case that they want to bring to this. For me to say that I've got, you know, the one true path, well, as soon as I run into the next organization, they're going to be like, yeah, but what about this, this, and that, right? So it's the same story forever, I think. I mean, you know, it might not be Kubernetes for some organization. It might be like, oh, our, you know, instead of Kubernetes being our lingua franca is, you know, Linux. But then, you know, we're deploying across this. We've got the same sorts of issues. We have to maintain applications across lots of platforms. Oh, wouldn't it be great if we had APIs for everything? Wouldn't it be great if we had something that applies consistency? You know, so a lot of these deployment and usage patterns, it doesn't matter if it's Kubernetes. It's just for, you know, good or bad, we've mostly adopted this as a lingua franca. But there's plenty of people succeeding without it. You know, you got our friend DHH. He's got his, you know, Maersk rename. He doesn't need Kubernetes, that's but right. You know what? He's re-implementing the same patterns.
Yeah,
and so yeah.
Well, maybe what
at least it's open source.
Yeah,
at least it's standardized.
The part I guess I keep thinking about, maybe this is just wrong, but I'll throw it out there, was it does feel like in computing at some point, like, a level of abstraction sort of emerges and becomes good enough that we don't think about it. And I think we were kind of joking earlier about like the file system. I don't know. It just works, right? The operating system, it just works. You can go deeper, like, you know, mostly no one writes assembly. There's all these languages and these compilers, and we just, you know, pick your high level language. And for the most part, you just go with that. And it's, I guess that's kind of where I just feel like we've just been stuck for a long time around. It's like, well, I want to build a, you know, if you will, a some type of scale application. Let's call it that. I don't want to call it cloud application, just sort of something with scale. And, you know, and I know, you know, Adam Jacob is trying to make a run at this. It just feels like, you know, like the Kubernetes and the CNCF, like we're just kind of stuck. We're just kind of stuck with like more and more abstraction. So I've just been like kind of looking around as like anything else even emerging, like kind of joke I like to run is I love the marketing, even though the company went out of business, like the data center operating system, DCOS, right? So the thing is like, yeah, like there should just be some operating system kind of thing that it all just kind of works if you kind of, if you will, live with this level of abstraction. Now, I watched the Adam Jacob presentation he did at the one of the conferences. It's on YouTube. We'll have a link to it. But he mentioned this thing I'd never heard about is the Wing programming language, right? And it was sort of this, the short story is Wing combines infrastructure and runtime code into one language. So I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting where it's like, maybe this is like, instead of having DevOps, right, the two groups to work together, it's like, no, everything is specified in kind of this programming language. And then if you will, when you deploy it, it's not really a compiler in the sense of a traditional compiler, but it sort of just figures out all the underlying infrastructure for you. And, you know, it just kind of just works, right? So you don't have to know about Terraform or CloudFormation or Pulumi or whatever, all the other things. And so I don't know, like, you know, Matt, I really wanted your opinion because this is like kind of your old world and kind of your new world. It's like, is something like this, like, you know, is the world ready for something like this? Is this a way out of the CNCF landscape? Can we just like get above it? Or, and if you will, the compiler for the cloud, if you will.
No,
no.
I looked at it and I was like, that sounds great. And then, you know, there are two dozen options to alternatives, right? I mean, we could stick with Terraform. We could stick with Pulumi. We could, you know, implement something in a CDK or an SDK, or, you know, there's just so many ways to skin this cat that, I don't, I mean, you know, good luck, Wing. I think that it'll have some traction, but it just didn't feel that compellingly different enough to me to want to spend more time with it. And I think that's the problem for like anything new, right? Is you're in this crowded landscape where you have 1,000 choices, you know, you have the CNCF landscape in front of you, and how do you differentiate yourself?
I don't know. What do you think? You sort of made a run at this with your time in Pivotal. I mean, different, but similar ideas, but different implementations. Like, you know, are you ready to dust off the Pivotal messaging? And your old, I guess, the CEO, the former CEO, right? He's out trying something new. I don't know.
Yeah, modernizing mainframe stuff with AIs or whatever. You know, sure. Well, you know, I have two thoughts, Brandon. One is, I don't know. Coincidentally, I guess to a Pivotal way of thinking about it. But then also if you look at like many of the configuration things out there, like I feel like maybe you need to just like pick what infrastructure you want and stop dicking around and dedicate your life to that infrastructure.
Right.
And instead of all these like different configuration things that work with all the stuff, just be like, no. We work with this stuff.
This is what we use, right? Yeah,
and like all that time that we're going to save trying to figure out, you know, being, you know, we just want to be mono cloud, and you know, that'll either work or it won't work. But the chance that it won't work is probably as good as the chance of other things that won't work, right? Like you go into that platform and you're fine, and then sure, you've got all these companies that are 200 years old that have all sorts of stuff, and you got to manage that, and that's a thing. But like, just sort of stick to the configuration that's built for the platform that they're using. I don't know if that's good, but it seems like maybe we should just try that and see what happens. now the second, well, the middle thing until I get to the second is like, I, you know, y'all were making me think what sort of constant specification, not programming language, but sort of like specification config kind of format has like lasted the longest. Bash. You know, there's programming languages, but if you think about it, like HTML and JavaScript have kind of like resisted anything else. Like, sure, you've got like Objective-C and whatever Android is, but like those two things, whatever it is they are, it's very confusing. But and they've evolved and they've been in place, and so something about how they've existed and that whole ecosystem, like, you know, they haven't gone away. And they've
JavaScript has evolved like crazy,
and right, but it's like still there, Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, browsers aren't going away. And I think, you know, Terraform had the window to be that, and now people are, you know, actively trying to tear it down, or replace it with OpenTofu and other alternatives.
Sure, sure.
I mean, that's the closest thing I can think of in this space is, you know, something became the lingua franca, and then people are like, I'm tired of speaking French.
Right? And then so that gets me to my second thought, which I was, you know, kind of now that I've rediscovered that there's people actually on Twitter. And it's not just a wasteland of Bitcoin and vaporware or, you know, that kind of aesthetic-y stuff. I was saying, like, I don't think there has ever been a configuration language that anyone has liked. Like whether it's like,
but I mean, that's just like Kubernetes, right? It's gonna have its warts, and there are people who are like willing to go with what they have. You know, they're like, fine, this is the worst best alternative.
And so, like, you know, I'm sure there are people who complained about, like, dot files. Although, yep. I think people like dot files. They seem pretty into that. Like, I think as always, with things that people don't like, what they don't like are things they don't like. Now, if they don't like bad things. But I'm sure there are plenty of, you know, there used to be this whole thing of sharing your .emacs file and your .bash file. Or, you know, like, so people actually do like dot files. They just don't like other people's dot files. Maybe that's the rule of configuration stuff is like everyone likes configuration, just not other people's configuration. But, you know, and then I was never big into the Windows world, but did people like .ini files? I'm not sure. Like someone did point out that you used to have the, what was it, autoexec.bat? I think people liked the fuck out of that. They were really into those files. And then you had, I think in Java, we had .property files. I don't know what Pascal was using or what they use in C. And then you had XML, which turned into WSstar. We're not allowed to like that. That was apparently terrible.
Nobody liked that.
Yeah, and then you had, I don't remember.
Come on, keep going.
I don't remember what Rails used.
No, you're
like
forgetting. Your favorite, Cote, is all the network configuration, right? You know,
the MIB files.
That's say one that, I mean, you know, you named a bunch there, but like, you know, your first one, I mean, not a config file, but HTML, it's like, you don't know, like is a strong word, but it's like, it stood the test. I mean, it's probably going on 30 plus years. I mean, if the web's around, it's like, and I don't know, you know, there's been a few attempts, I guess, Adobe Flash to kind of recreate the front end client, but really nothing has even come close to like displacing it. So do we like it? You know, maybe that's a too strong word, but it's like it does seem to work, right? And then we like the fact that, like, just, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you can just spit out the smell, and it generally works for the stuff we want.
I guess maybe what I was wangling to in my mind, without knowing it, with the HTML is like no one owns it. There's no commercial entity that owns it, despite the attempts Microsoft open, early on, and Netscape.
Yeah,
but and so therefore, I wonder if it's the case. If we were to look at the other configuration stuff that kind of comes and goes all the way up to your Wing programming language, there could be a theory that, like, when it comes to configuration and automation scripting, if someone owns it, eventually it goes away. Whereas, like, if there's no commercial interest around it, it can just live forever because, like, you know, you don't have to worry about making money. And making those decisions. I don't know if that's true, but like it seems like no one owns YAML, right? So maybe that's going to live forever.
No. Nobody, trust me, nobody owns YAML.
Maybe the different question I guess I'm posing, and I know you both are going to be at CNCF next week, so you know, it'll be interesting to be there or to get your takes when you're there. But you know, I guess it's just like, what is the ultimate goal of all this stuff? And it's like, I guess I just live in the world where I'm often helping, you know, large corporations with like hundreds of applications try to like use all this stuff better, right? And my feeling now is kind of come to the point of like, well, you know, all this cloud native stuff only applies to a very small percentage of those applications where it's ever going to really help them, right? It's just because there's just too much other stuff. But you could say like that's not the goal. Maybe the goal is just to like help this small percentage of applications. But like, if you will, the quote unquote real value or the big value is sort of unlocking, you know, how do you help all these other applications, you know, if you will, better, you know, become take advantage of the benefits of the cloud in some more meaningful way. And if it is just like, And I think the CNCF has done a good job, if you will, sort of like outlining here's where we are today. But in just sort of like, if that's the solution, you know, you're really like 90% of the IT spend today is just never going to touch any of that stuff. So you're just sort of out, you know, and that's maybe too strong, but like, you're just sort of like, you know, you're just in a very small pool, and, you know, and people are just gonna have to figure out the other stuff on their own. So, you know, maybe that's not the goal of the cloud native, you know, foundation or that group, that technology. It's just not, you know, it's not going to penetrate it the way it looks today.
Well, I think strategically that's kind of a compelling event for them to get involved in OpenTofu. Is they looked at, you know, hey, we have this de facto standard that ties the cloud native world to cloud to, you know, traditional-ish infrastructure. And I don't think there were a lot of other things kind of similar to that space. I mean, that that were as much of a linchpin. And, you know, I know there's criticisms of them taking that on, but it is kind of like, you know, that bedrock foundational technology that a lot of people depended on. And, you know, we could agree that, like, hey, we actually need this to be open for everybody, or something like this needs to be there. And, oh, by the way, we can just fork this thing because the license allows us to keep going with it.
Yeah.
I like that theory that, like, the you're going to take the Terraform stuff and make it into this unowned community format that, like, will just have no commercial interest behind it, and therefore have more longevity.
Well, that was the promise before the rug pull, is, you know, everything that HashiCorp was doing felt like that. You know, they're like, oh yeah, we're doing this for the good of the industry. We think we can make this pie big enough, and, you know, we'll get part of it, but this is good for everyone.
And so maybe this is a little homework for you guys when you're there. It's sort of like, well, like, I don't know, like, it'd be interesting, because what you really would need, you know, the three major cloud vendors, you know, maybe a little VMware, a little Red Hat, like, really, like, embracing it, saying, like, this is what it is. Because, like, that really, because you've just had those five, that sort of becomes, okay, we're all going to use that for the way that we, you know, if you will, configure all this infrastructure. Now you've got something that has a chance, right? You have something that people are going to be like, now if everyone sort of doesn't want to, you know, like, everyone has their own version and everything is going to be the same, then we're kind of maybe back to where we started before. So I don't know, it'd be interesting to hear.
I think you're coming up with a good open source foundation strategy, is that, you know, you start with the GNU stuff, which I was reminded in reading something, it's not actually open source, it's copyleft something or another, which is fine. Or I don't know, I get confused about this. But then you go into the ASF world, where it's basically like, we just want 1,000 flowers to bloom, and we're going to make sure it's cool and take care of it. And then you went to the OpenStack world, where they wanted to have the big tent, have all these people come in. But I think what you two are making me think is, like, the Linux Foundation and the CNCF's opportunity is, we need to have a big pie. Like, however big you think the pie is, if it gets bigger, all the commercial interests can come in and they can get a slice of the pie and sustain this.
I like that. So I think it'd be a great lightning talk, right? And I think that is the point, would be like, hey, while we're here together at the CNCF conference, it's like, we need to come together on, let's call it TOFU, OpenTofu. Because just to your point, that'll grow the pie bigger. And it really, I mean, I'd say it even a different way. It's sort of like, it gives, like, this 80% of customers that are sort of like on the sidelines that, like, they just can't adopt, right? There's just too much friction. Like, you know, you don't, you can bring them in if you can tell them, like, yeah, this is how you provision all your infrastructure. And it's well understood by all the major cloud platforms. And, like, we got to agree on this. That would be, like, at least a good, I'd like to see a good steering committee fight over that, right? Like, well, make it all together.
I don't think it's that much of a fight. I mean, I think the CNCF sees themselves as, you know, stewards of the industry, where they're like, hey, if we stop shooting each other, we can all sit down and enjoy some pie.
yeah. No one wants to live in a tent, but everyone agrees on pie. Right? Yes. Like, so the more pie, the better, I think is what we need. Well, Maybe closing that out a little bit, you mentioned the wing thing. Now, I always like to scroll down to the bottom of a web page, and I took a screenshot of this. Maybe we can put it in the show art, Brandon. But at the bottom of whatever this wingcloud.com, I don't know their domain name address, but there's this curious little thing. If you look at your album art, or you go look it up now, there's, you know, the usual sort of listing of all their social things, which they got them all. They don't have Blue Sky. or Mastodon. I don't know what they're trying to say with that. But they've got all the social stuff and the licenses. But there's two curious illustrations underneath the ground. So it's below the ground on their thing. One of them is the skeleton with some broken up legs and a pretty nice hoodie. And on the hoodie, it says YAML. So I presume that means that they
would wear that.
They're trying to end YAML and bury it. And then oddly, I didn't do the research to figure out why this is down here, but below the skeleton is a coffee mug with steam coming out of it that says Java on it. So I feel like, I don't know what's up with the Wing people, but they are trying to pick a fight with Java, which is just like, wow. That feels like some sort of internecine, like Spanish Civil War shit where the anarchists are fighting the communists. And meanwhile, you know, Franco's like, cool.
Well, that is how we make this a chapter art, and this deserves its own podcast. Now that I see this, I didn't really know why it was in here until you pointed that out. I was like, I would love to meet the graphic editor.
Why
is the coffee still hot?
Yeah, why is it hoppy? Why is it falling? There's so many. I mean, there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of follow-up questions to this.
As you would point out, Brandon, you know there were lots of meetings about this.
Right? Yeah.
There were many review meetings, lots of emails, lots of revisions of it. Like, that looks good, but what about this idea? Mm-hmm. I don't know about that. And, of course, they went back to the original idea after weeks of talking about it. Yeah. But, like, you know, this was reviewed.
And, well, if anybody on the Wing programming language knows the story, reach out, find us in Slack, email, wherever, and tell us the story, because we want to know. We want to know more about that.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff. Well, speaking of open source stuff and pies, I didn't quite understand what was going on in this pie reduction program, but I think I'm now able to pull together a few things I heard out there on the airwaves. It seems like yet another company in the open source space, is it Buoyant? Someone's gonna have to explain this to me.
Linkerd is an open source project. Yeah,
they decided we'd like to make more money off of our open source project, and this caused all sorts of problems. And you know, as always, I don't quite understand all the ins and the outs, which never stopped me from talking about it. But it made me formulate a theory in my head. Over the years, we've talked about open source companies that like try to commercialize more, and my new theory is that if you make some sort of open source business decision and Adam Jacobs immediately writes a Twitter thread about it, whatever it is he said, you've done something wrong. if he feels the need to write some thread about it, whether he likes it or doesn't like it, it's just like, no, you fucked up. Just you're done. Like, you don't want, the more that he writes about your decision, the worse it's gone. I don't like it. But what has gone on there?
So what happened is Buoyant, the company who are the primary developers of Linkerd, the CNCF graduated project, have decided to stop making non-commercial builds available, except for like nightlies and edge releases. So they've been the stewards of this CNCF project and putting out releases, for a while. And I guess when they got into, you know, as you graduate, as you move between the different levels within the CNCF from sandbox to incubation to graduation, they're looking for adoption as open source, adoption of other maintainers, you know, people working on it, contributions coming from other companies. And my assumption or my kind of understanding of this is they got into graduation having maintainers working at other companies, competitors to Buoyant or, you know, people who had a vested interest in the project, and those maintainers left. And so Buoyant is like the sole maintainers of a graduated CNCF project, which was not the intention. You know, the intention of, or at least my you know, reading of the CNCF's guidelines is once you get into graduation, it's supposed to be a, you know, meritocracy of different companies and organizations working on this project, and everyone's pulling together to make that pie bigger, right? And Buoyant is like looked around and said, we're doing all the work. We're going to stop making, you know, free lunches available. Somebody else can pick that up if they want. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for now, if you want Linkerd, you're going to get Buoyant's Enterprise Linkerd instead. And, you know, someone is going to have to step in and, you know, test and release Linkerd separately.
So this is like the Red Hat thing from last year where they're like, hey, I got nothing against free lunches. I just don't want to make them for you.
Exactly. And so, you know, good or bad, I think we linked to a CNCF GitHub issue about it where, you know, people are having it out where they're like, hey, you know, this is wrong. This shouldn't happen. How do we make sure this doesn't happen again in the future? Do we demote them? You know, what is the status of Linkerd as a CNCF project? Because the signals to the industry when you are a graduated project is you can adopt this without worrying that someone is going to pull your rug. And, you know, I mean, that's kind of what happened here is this graduated project that, you know, was in the same ranks as Kubernetes and Prometheus and Istio is now, oh, well, you know, if you want it, you got to use a commercial version and accept our licensing.
So, you know, Brandon, you talk a lot to people who are doing cloud stuff, modernizing, migrating, or doing nothing, you know, going between there. And then Matt Ray, I feel like very much so compared to me, you understand what's going on in the open source world. So like between the two of you, if we were to have, DEF CON is the wrong scale. But there's like some kind of scale of like how much we're going in one direction. And like on a scale of like 1 to 10, how much are we going in the direction of like, ah, this open source stuff, what a fucking hassle. Like as opposed, like, so for example, if I'm some fancy pants, whatever kind of executive, and we're like, all right, we're gonna do the cloud native and we're gonna choose this open source project to handle this critical component, like how much should that person be worried about, like, as you bring up, Matt Ray, rug pulling happening? Is that like built into the spreadsheet where it's just like you go to your enterprise architects and your CTOs and you're like, you got to rate rug pulling on a 0 to 5 risk basis. and then that's how we're going to select, like, because if we go commercial, sure, there's risks, but there is no rug. So we don't have to worry about it being pulled. Right. Like how are people, how should people evaluate that?
I mean, I think for the last couple of years, I mean, I think for a while, you know, it didn't happen. And then, you know, as we've, you know, documented on the show, probably too much, you know, it seems like every few weeks or months, like we're talking about another project that's like doing something like this. So at this point, I think, you know, it's like, you just have to know that, okay, whatever you're using, if you're not paying for something like that, paying directly for it, there's obviously some chance this can happen. And, you know, and it's kind of, you know, it's just interesting, the whole thing, because it is, I think, very similar to the Red Hat thing. And this is sort of like, you know, to summarize the Adam Jacob comment to all of these things, it's like, it's wrong because they changed it. It would have been okay if they had just done this from the beginning, right? That's sort of like his thing is like, yeah, build your open source project, build your commercial version, and then just always allow a community version to, if you will, come to life, but make sure the community is doing that, right?
Yeah.
And it is kind of, you know, what's interesting about this is like, after all the talk of like, what are people really worried about? It's really the thing that frustrates people is the inability to backport, you know, like security fixes into the older versions. Like that becomes like the real tension, right? Yeah. Because like, yeah, it's actually probably going to be fairly easy to quote unquote build the latest version, right? That'll probably be a lot easier than it is to be like, oh, I actually need some of this. So that's what Red Hat is, you know, kind of started, right? They said, hey, if you want the security fixes, like, we're not doing that. And then that's kind of what Linkerd is saying here as well. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it's like, in the end though, I do think, you know, maybe to the CNCF's credit, it's like, well, there are other solutions, you know, Istio. Now, you know, we can debate whether Linkerd Istio is at 1-for-1 and how easy is it to switch, but you know, you could switch to Istio if you wanted. And there's actually quite a few other solutions within there. You can pay for Linkerd. I don't know. At the end, though, there is kind of part of me that's also like, well, if it's like, you know, these projects will eventually kind of, if you will, wane over time if there isn't anyone else contributing to it anymore. And it's like that it does kind of become the natural end to these projects. It's like, you know, it just is what it is.
Yeah, but the CNCF was supposed to be a safe harbor. That's the biggest issue here is the people who are getting most upset are those who say, you know, it's one thing when a commercial company does a rug pull and, you know, they had something that wasn't hosted, you know, that wasn't part of part of the CNCF, but this is supposed to be signaling the rest of the industry, like, this project is foundational. Right. You can trust it.
So on that, to your point there, then it's like, but like, what can, if other maintainers, and I don't know the story of why they left, so maybe that's the big missing link. So, but like, if people, you know, just naturally leave the project for whatever reason, if just because of the, you know, their priorities or their jobs change, it's like, I don't know. Is there anything the CNCF can really do? It's just like, well, the project was, you know, when it graduated, it looked like that and people are now leaving. Like, I don't know. Does the CNCF, I guess they could come in and like, I know there was some talk and we've linked to some interesting Twitter threads about like, do they get demoted? Does it just lose its badge of CNCF-ness? Or is it just like, that's just how it is. Like, projects are eventually going to, like, you know, over time they may, you know, if you will.
Yeah. Well, that's there are annual health reports that CNCF projects submit where you say, you know, hey, here's the health of our project. Here's how many contributors, you know, that sort of stuff. You know, I've written one of those, you know, and you try to like make your project look good and say like, this is why we deserve to be at the level we are or to move up. But yeah, there's never been a demotion. And to me it's like, this warrants, you know, this puts risk for adoption of Linkerd. If I'm somebody, you know, if I'm Amazon and I've decided to put Linkerd in all my products, I don't know what they use for a service mesh, but, you know, I look at that, I'm like, huh, well, we made a bad bet, right? Or, you know, we need to get involved in that and help me, you know, move it up to here. If you're counting on this project, you kind of have to get involved or it should get demoted, because that's a signal that like other people can't trust this, you know, for their stuff. And I get the same thing for, you know, the open source project I work on is like, we're a sandbox project. I tell people like, you know, we're trying to move up. We've got good metrics. I'm trying to prove how good we are. And now I think, looking at Linkerd, they're going to have to be defensive. I mean, I don't know if the CNCF will, I don't know, you know, I don't know what they're going to do, but to me, they're not a good candidate to be a graduated project anymore.
Well, maybe the whole metaphor is kind of like off. Maybe it's because graduation sort of is like happens in time.
Sounds final, right?
Yeah, it sounds final. Like maybe it should just be more just like you kind of call it a health report, but it's just sort of, you know, it's something like that where it's just like, hey, at any time you can just go look and be like it's almost more like the weather. It's like, is it raining? You know, is this in the red status, the yellow status? You know, and it's like, well, if a project only has vendor contributors, so maybe you would just call that out and so people would know, right? And then and vice versa. But I don't know. It is one of those things where it's like, you know, going back in time and like changing stuff. I don't know. I just, maybe we're just like, there's like people want too much from the CNCF. It's sort of like, at the end, it's just like a body that's sort of like providing some general governance and like helping organize the industry, but it doesn't have any, and maybe people are getting too tripped up on like getting the quote unquote right status right in there. It's like, hey, at the end of the day, you got to build something that's being widely adopted, that you are somehow making money. And that's really the end goal. If you get some, if the CNCF can sort of, if you will,
but that's why
that's fine.
That's the whole point of organizations belonging to the CNCF and contributing to them, is they want someone to be the referee. They want someone to shepherd these projects to a healthy state. You know, we get some of that. They want them to put down guidance for how projects should be run and how they put out releases. And then they provide the scorecard and they say, you know, this is how we judge these projects. And they've played that role. So I think, you know, they are more hands-on. And when you move between the levels, you get more booth exposure. You get more, right, you know, cloud resources. You get, you know, you get meetings. You get to be on the calendar. So there are definitely benefits to moving between these levels. And, you know, so what I want is, you know, as a player of the game, is I want, you know, a referee who can make hard calls, because they haven't had to make very many so far.
So I should know the answer to this. Like, so is this on, like, is this somehow going to be discussed at this?
Oh, it's being discussed. Like, yeah.
But I know, but will there be like a forum or like, you know, people, I don't know, maybe Matt Cote, maybe you can like get in there. You can put on your capital J journalism hat and be like, all right, go in there and like figure out like what's going on. Are they, what's even being discussed? What are, I don't want to say, demotion, or is something like that being discussed? That would be curious. I'd be curious to hear about that.
Well, yeah, that's why I subscribe to the issue, right? They're having this discussion, and the technical oversight committee, that is where this issue about Linkerd's health is being discussed. And so you've got, you know, lots of, you know, quote unquote luminaries in the area who are, you know, hashing it out and discussing the pros and cons of what's happened. And, you know, the TOC is going to have to decide how this is. That's their job, is to decide what the CNCF does. And if they don't do anything, it kind of signals other folks like, hey, if you get that graduation badge, you know, slowly weed out the other maintainers and you can still do your rug pull.
All right. I like it. This is good. The palace intrigue. All right. So I look forward to the report from next week. Maybe we can get some live on the scene, some TikToks live on the scene from the
well, TOC. It's definitely going to be a topic. Yeah.
I like it. All right. Well, Matt, get some firsthand quotes. Don't make sure everyone goes on the record. We don't want anyone, you know, we're not taking any of these like,
well, I mean, even the TOC meetings are recorded. So
yeah. Oh, even better. Okay.
Yeah. There was a meeting this week. I haven't watched it. Maybe we'll pull up the transcripts or something.
Maybe we'll get AI to summarize that baby for us.
Thank you.
All right. Well, good. I like it. Well, it's good. Some controversy going to CNCF. That's into CNCF Europe. So it'd be fun to hear how it works.
We got to get one of those people over at the New Stack. Like, their whole job is just to watch all of these recordings and read the mailing list and the drama.
Someone needs to channel, what would Kara Swisher do in this situation? Yeah.
Like, can you, with all the information out in the open source world, all these recordings of stuff and stuff, like, if there was actual, like not even hard hitting, just sort of like, you know, lazy flopping investigative journalism into like all this stuff. Oh, the articles would be so great. Like, every now and then I feel like the Register just like stumbles out of a pub and kind of like falls down and like sees some notes that fell out of someone's pocket and they'll write that up. And that's thrilling. But just like going to attend all these actual like meetings and watching it and saying like, here's what's being discussed. This shit is fucking crazy. It's a lot of
work, right?
I know. And, you know, it would make maybe negative $20,000 a month. I think
exactly.
I mean, what it would cost.
I mean, the Linux kernel has stuff like that. And it feels like those sorts of those journalism groups are like constantly going out of business.
Yeah. Well, you know, everyone writes about AI nowadays.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I think I was listening to they couldn't come up with the phrase for it, but the every 2 months. The Fort Monthly, I think maybe is what you would call it. The Fort Monthly cloud roundup on our friends, the Cloudcast. And as they said, there's no cloud news anymore. It's just AI news. That's all there is, which I think is accurate. Well, speaking of no more cloud news, Brandon, do we have any bureaucracy this episode?
Just as always, if you would like a sticker, all you have to do is send your postal address to stickers@softwaredefinedtalk.com. And I will be happy to send you a sticker anywhere in the world.
Well, there's also several conferences coming up. Next week, I'll be in Pasadena at DevOps Days LA. It would be pretty awesome if they called it DevOps Days Pasadena, but I don't know if it would get the same amount of attention. And that's also, Scale is also happening then, Scale 21X. Did they ever say what the X stands for, Matt Ray? Talking about hard-hitting journalism. Maybe we'll figure that. We'll have an expose.
I think it was meant to be like expose. A multiplier, right? Oh, they're like, okay. you know, and then it just kind of turned into like, well, it's also account. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll be there March 14th to 17th. I don't know if I'll actually be there all those days, but you should check that out. And also, we mentioned the week after that, March 19th to 22nd, is going to be KubeCon in Paris. So that's the Europe KubeCon. And if you haven't bought tickets yet, you can use the discount code, get your pin out. You need to lick it a little bit to get the grit out of the ballpoint there. The discount code is KCEEU. Wait, let me start over again. You can cross that out. Hopefully you're using one of those pins that's got an eraser on it. If you had those, it's, you know, and I have to say, if you're buying a pin with an eraser, you really need to kind of like sort your shit out. Like, a pin is not there to be erased. Get a pencil. So that discount code is KCEU24VMWBC20. Or you could just go to softwaredefinedtalk.com/457 to use that code to get 20% off your ticket. Also, there's DevOps Days Birmingham, April 17th to 18th. I think that's the Alabama one, not the English one. And also next week, in the middle of the week, I'm having an executive dinner in Dallas. I don't know if it's full or not, but if you fancy yourself being some kind of executive, you should go to softwaredefinedtalk.com/457 and you can click on a link to try to get yourself in. And then also more promotion for my work. We have a an in-person event on April 11th talking all about what's up with Tanzu. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes, and you can check that out and see if you can get in to see that. I'm fancying it. It's sort of like a multi-customer EVC. And if that phrase means anything to you and it sounds interesting, then you should check it out. Otherwise, don't, because you won't like it. Now, speaking of things that you will like, Brandon, what do you have to recommend?
Well, probably this crowd is either has already seen it if they want to see it. But Dune Part Two, like if you know, you know. Like if you like Dune, the movie, the first one, if you like the books, I thought it was excellent. I'm sure I will watch it many more times when it comes to video. But, you know, just like the first one, really good. I guess for those that were frustrated because like the first one sort of ends in the middle of the book, or I don't know, maybe the first third of the book, obviously this tells the rest of the story. So loved it. Check it out if you want something to watch. Worth going to see it in the theater. It's hard to believe, but I guess the first Dune was released to video. That was all back during all the lockdown. So it was nice to go into a movie theater and like see the whole thing up in the big screen. Really well done.
Well, that's good. Yeah. How about yourself, Matt Ray?
I'm still debating seeing it in IMAX or not. It's
That would probably be even better.
That's I think the tickets are like $40.
Well, you know what you should do?
$40 Australian.
Buy yourself. I'll tell you, those will save you money. Buy yourself one of those Apple Vision Pros, and then you can watch it on the screen. And I'm sure you'll save the $40 on a movie ticket. You know,
eventually. You go wrong. Yes.
And also, with the size of your family, I mean, if you multiply that $40 across the family members, you'll easily make up the money.
Yeah, that's the kicker. It's like, you know, the kids want to go see it, so we'll probably just, you know, go for the regular, you know, $18 ticket.
Next thing you know, you're buying, what do they call it there in Australia? Hot corn, like instead of popcorn or something, and like all sorts of sodas.
Sneak the snacks in that. That's how you can save money. Everyone brings a water bottle.
Everybody does that here.
And then you put your M&Ms
in your literally pocket. Literally, there's a food court in front of the movie theater, and people are bringing in like bags of McDonald's and you know, and sushi, and nobody cares.
No sunscreen and food in the movie theaters. Yes. Australia, love it. Gotta love it.
Yeah, so my picks.
I feel like knowing the Australians I have and hearing the stories, I feel like they would walk in eating a candy bar or a Mars bar or whatever, and someone would say, "You can't bring outside food," and they would take a bite and be like, "I'm not bringing any in, mate," and just keep walking.
You're not that far off. Yeah, so my picks this week, we talked a little bit in the pre-show about the sun and Australia and beaches and the like. So I threw a link in my recommendations to Conan O'Brien visiting the Cancer Council store and Bondi Beach. Very entertaining. But my pick this week is the audiobook for a book called Our Band Could Be Your Life. It's kind of the history of 1980s punk rock. And it's deep. I mean, it covers, I think, 12 bands, something like that. So each band gets a separate chapter and, you know, a chapter on Husker Du, The Replacements, you know, Mission of Burma, you know, Sonic Youth, Dinosaur Jr. It's great. So if you have any interest in that scene or, you know, time, the stories are all very good, especially the Butthole Surfers. I, you know, as someone who was tangentially on the scene coming, you know, into it towards the tail end, I didn't know all the this stuff that well. So it's great. So I highly recommend
strong it. Recommendation.
Strong recommendation. I mean, even the bands I didn't really like know or care that much about, it's worth listening. And what's funny is the book came out, I think, in like 2005 or something like that. The audiobook came out 2019 with all these celebrity readers or whatnot. What's kind of funny is like a lot of the bands reformed after the book came out, and have actually continued on putting out albums. And some of them have had bigger careers than they had before they broke up. So anyway, strong recommendation.
Yeah. Books. They still work.
Audiobooks. You know, I mean, the book I'm sure would be good, but the audiobook makes it more, makes it go faster.
Well, my recommendation is, you know, I was sad. I lost track of time. I don't know. This is 2-3 years ago, but I used to enjoy the Bruce Sterling blog that he had at Wired. Now, what I did not enjoy is it didn't have an RSS feed. I don't know if you ever noticed this, Matt Ray. I'm sure you looked at it every now and then, but it was impossible to subscribe to it. But there was a certain delight in just going to a website like the old days, long ago when we were young and free and careless and used XML to configure servers. And, you know, so that was fun. But then it went away. And I recently discovered that he's got a brand new blog. Of course, it's on some fucking artist Italian site. But it's just as good as the old one in the same style. If you look up Art Maker blog or you look in our show notes, you can find a link to it. And it's pretty much exactly like the old one, but the color scheme is fantastic. I think he's shooting for some sort of Klein blue with white on the foreground. But you should check that out if you like his stuff. And I would like to submit my annual recommendation that whenever he and that other dude in Austin do their state of the world. Yeah. Stop using the pre-tags. That fucks us all up. Like, I don't want to have to read your shit on my laptop. You put a pre-tag in there, I can't read it on a phone, and therefore I don't read it. Like, it's very frustrating. And I can't even get it in reader mode. Because, you know, just imagine you're a programmer and you're rendering HTML and you're like, you're probably like, the point of a pre-tag is to preserve the formatting in the text. So I will not touch what's in there, even if I know that it's going to become impossible to read on a mobile device. It's just like the programmer will never cross that line. So either A, programmers of the world, fuck the pre-tag, ignore it, like get rid of it. Or they need to stop putting a pre-tag in the forms.
Yeah, I think, is Grease Monkey still a thing? You could totally do like a website, you know, that... you could totally just kill pre-tags out of the HTML.
I feel like I might have a good Long Now talk for the Long Now Foundation that I might want to submit to them. Good 90-minute talk.
Wow.
Speaking of 90-minute talks, you've been listening to Software Defined Talk. If you want to get links to the things we talked about, a whole bunch of things that we didn't, and that discount code, link to the blog, the books we talked about, you know, a link to Dune Part 2 if you don't know how to find that. You can go to softwaredefinedtalk.com/457 and check it all out. And with that, we'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Oh, look at that. There was a whole bunch of comments.